Hello and welcome to the call. This is Dotsie Bregel, founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be found online at www.nabbw.com. It's the only association that is devoted to addressing issues concerning 38 million of the healthiest, wealthiest, and best educated generation of women to ever hit midlife. In addition to NABBW.com, we also host the number one site for baby boomer women on major search engines, which is BoomerWomenSpeak.com, and that is BoomerWomenSpeak.com. Again, welcome to the call, and we're happy to announce that we have Gail Carson with us today, and Gail is going to be talking about energizing your life and using power relationships and your uniqueness as the road to success. Hello, Gail, and welcome to the call.
Hi, Dotsie. It's wonderful to be with you today.
Well, good. I'm glad to have you here. All right, let me give you a little background about Gail, and then we're going to jump right in and start picking her brain for some really great information. Gail Carson was born in Albany, New York, and she showed managerial promise even at the tender age of three. While performing a somersault in her first dance recital, Gail's crown suddenly fell off. And rather than finish the show without her full costume, she asked that the music be stopped so she could put her crown back on. And the musicians complied with Gail's request, and they waited to continue until she said, "Okay, let's do it again." And thus began Gail's career as a remarkable show-stopping entrepreneur. After graduating from Emerson College with a BA in English and theater, Gail moved to Miami and got her first job in 2 weeks. A year later, she bought the business from her boss for no money down and proceeded to profitably diversify its sales base from 1 to 7 divisions. Her business eventually became the largest independent organization in the industry. As CEO, Gail managed a diverse staff of over 350 people, graduated more than 250,000 students from her training programs, and personally managed the company's complex payroll. While serving as CEO of her business, she also received her doctorate from the Nova Southeastern University, and then eventually Gail sold that business for over 20 times its initial value. Now, today, Gail Carson is an expert advisor, and she's a coach to CEOs and entrepreneurial managers around the world. She holds a CSP, which stands for a Certified Speaking Professional, and a CMC, which is a Certified Management Consultant, both the highest designations in their respective fields. She is also still the first and only woman to serve as chairman of one of the largest Better Business Bureaus in the United States. She's the developer of cable television series called Business Today. She has received numerous honors from her peers, including being named to over 40 Who's Who books, and Gail has been featured in USA Today and appeared on the Larry King radio show. She captured the steps she followed in her own successful route to the top in a book entitled How to Get to the Top and Stay There. So today, as president of the Carson Research Center, she serves as a consultant to more than 50 industries on 6 continents, advising them on current business trends and cutting-edge opportunities to stay ahead of their competition. She's also president of the International Association of Information Marketers, which is an association for those who sell digitized information on the web. Her new book, SOB, which stands for Spunky Old Broads Who Kick Butt, has just been released. She is also the host of Entrepreneur Magazine's radio show, Women in Business. You can find Gail online at www.gailecarson.com. Well, there you go, Gail. How's that for an introduction?
Boy, that's a big one, and I hope I can live up to it.
I'm sure you can. Okay, Gail's here to talk about energizing your life and using power relationships and our uniqueness as the road to success. So, Gail, I just want to get started with the first question. Understanding that you can never be replaced, what is it you can do to have a dynamic impact in your world?
Well, I think that it's very important to determine what is absolutely the most important thing in your life to you. And, of course, first of all, it should be yourself, because if you don't think highly of yourself and if you don't take care of yourself, you can't be of value to anybody else. But understanding and bypassing that, the most important thing, I believe, is that you have to decide what is the legacy that you want to leave and then build around that. And for that particular purpose, you have a uniqueness. I mean, there are people who cannot be replaced. There are many of them we have seen in the past, whether it's been a Ronald Reagan type, or whether it be a Mahatma Gandhi type, or whether it be someone else, a Golda Meir. The whole point is that there are people themselves who will never have that personality or philosophy again, but they are replaced. Other people come in and take their place, but they have left a unique spot. They have left a unique legacy, and that's what everybody has to look at. What is the legacy that you can leave that is just you? And everybody has that uniqueness about them. They may not believe it, but it is there, and they can find it. And I think that's the important thing that you have to look at and say, what is it that I can do that will have my stamp on it that no one else can do?
Okay, and I think that's a really great point, because I really believe that all of us are born into our own greatness and that all of us have gifts and that we should use them for the good of others. But do you have any suggestions or recommendations for women to get at the core of who they are, figure out what those gifts are, and discover that uniqueness?
Well, you know, it's almost like a dream. I think you need to say to yourself, what would I do if I won the lottery? You know, a lot of people dream about winning the lottery, but very few people do. And interestingly enough, there are many people who have won the lottery who then are broke, you know, just 2 or 3 years later, because they do not have a plan. So if you were fortunate enough to win the lottery and you did not have to worry about bills or you know, responsibilities or things like that, what is it you would do? I mean, I cannot believe that any of the people listening to this would just vegetate. I mean, you know, my son said to me the other day, Mom, you know, if you sold everything, you'd never have to work another day in your life, and you could just lead a life of leisure. And I said to him, and that would last 48 hours, because I would just be so bored, because I just, you know, I can't just sit around doing nothing. So whether it's charities or whether it's volunteer organizations or whether it's a business or whether it's people that you want to meet or places that you want to go or whatever it is you want to do, if you had nothing to worry about, how would you live your life? And that is what you have to look at first and then work backwards from there. Because a lot of people say, oh, all my problems would be solved if I had this security or if I had this special person in my life or this or that. And that's not necessarily true. So if everything being equal was taken that you could do anything in your life that you wanted to do, what would that be? And that will give you a good clue on how to start positioning it.
Okay, very good. And actually, it also has to do with, even if it's a legacy of love that you want to leave for your family. Because I have to tell you, I speak with some women who are transitioning at midlife. And they're like, oh, gosh, you know, I just don't know what I want to do. I know what I like to do. I know what I don't like to do. But I've got to figure out, you know, what it is that I'm really passionate about and how I can work that into a way and make it profitable or not. And that's what I say, you know. If you don't have to make money, it could be volunteerism, which is something that's really needed in the world right now, because so many women are working, and a lot of us were the volunteers of years past.
But absolutely. I totally agree with you, Dorothy. And I also think that I think there's a couple things that you said that I would just like to respond to. Number one, if it is volunteerism, there's no reason why they themselves can't start their own cause or their own charity or their own passion. For example, one of the things that I'm working on right now is developing a line of workout clothes for breast cancer survivors, because I'm a 3-time breast cancer survivor myself, and there's really nothing out there. So it's very important for me to do that. That's something I want to do because I want women to be able to feel good about themselves when they go into a gym and work out if they are missing a breast.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is if there are people who know what their passions are but can't quite figure it out, I think they should take 6 months or a year and try a lot of different things in the particular arena of interest that they have and see what's good about it and what they don't like about it. And that will kind of sort it out for them as well.
Yes, great idea. Well, let's say you come up with an idea or you or feel like you're heading in the right direction. How can you remain positive when there are so many negative things going on and not just events, but people? How do you remain positive when you have a friend, well, whether it's a friend or not, say something like, oh, my gosh, you think you can do that? Or how are you going to do that? And do you think you can make money at that? And, you know, just all the naysayers, all the doubters, and all the people that are just negative. How can you remain positive?
Well,
in those
I think
situations.
There are a couple of things involved with this. You said a lot there. Number one, I think everybody needs to know that in terms of stress studies, they have found that 5 minutes of negative thinking takes the body 24 hours to recover from. So it's really important not to think negatively, and it's really important not to have negative people around you. And that's very hard to do in this day and age with everything that's going on, whether it's your own personal life or just life events. So I think that's a crucial entity. And then the second part of that is that we all experience approximately 100 abrasive incidents a day. In other words, I call them little oomphs that come into your life. And every time you have a, you know, there's a negative reaction. And that's about 3,000 a month. And whether it's, you know, getting all the red lights or getting in your car and somebody drove it and didn't put gas in it or going for that special something you wanted in the refrigerator and somebody got there before you did, whatever it is, there's 100 of them that happen in your day. So you really have to have a lot of positive things going on around you to make sure that you don't get affected by all of these things. Now, the most important thing, again, is feeling good about yourself. If you feel good about yourself, then that's the most important thing. And it's okay to have friends that question whether this is a good idea for you to do or not, and those people keep you balanced, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the point is, it's those people who say you can't do those things. That's different than saying, why do you want to do that, or are you sure about this? But someone who says you cannot do this or you don't have the ability to do this, that is a whole different issue. So you have to take a look. In fact, I have been truly looking through my friends, because I have some who have been around me for a long time, and they are not positive people, and I'm just tired of listening to their travails. Now, I need everybody listening to this to understand I am not immune from this. I lost an older son, but when he died out of the country, when we had a service for him here, I had it as a celebration of his life, because he accomplished a lot of wonderful things and he made a lot of people very happy. And so we had a celebration of his life. I got custody of a granddaughter, not his child, my daughter's child, but I had custody of her for a while. It wasn't easy raising someone who was 12 to 13 years old, but you did what you had to do. And so I certainly going through cancer was not a fun thing three times. But when I used to go in for my treatments, people would call me Little Miss Sunshine, and I'd say, well, why? And they'd say, well, you always have a smile on your face. And I'd say, well, why not? And they said, well, look what you're going through. And I said, yeah, but I'm getting cured, so that's the important thing. So I think it's a lot of how your own philosophy is positioned, because there is so much stuff out there that will bring you down if you let it, that you have to know you have been put on this earth to accomplish something for other people and for yourself, and that is why you are here.
Okay, gosh, that's great. And it's amazing that you can remain positive through some of those hardships. My gracious. What did you use during those times that helped you remain positive, if you don't mind sharing?
Well, I think, first of all, I'm an exercise fanatic, so I think exercise had a lot to do with it. I kept my body as strong as it could possibly be, and I called a friend of mine who was a doctor of nutrition, and I said, this is what I'm going to have to go through. How do I keep my energy up? And he told me what to do. I read every piece of literature I could so I could be aware of what I was going to go through and what I needed to do to keep myself healthy. And by the way, I went through all of this, even though I am married, I went through all of this by myself. My husband did not meet my doctors. My husband did not drive me to chemo treatments or bring me home. I did this all myself because I could. And so it's just a matter of I knew that I controlled my destiny. The doctors were doing the best that they could do for me, and I had to do the best for me by keeping myself as healthy and strong as I could going through this.
Great, great points, very good points. And the fact that you recognize that, you know, others can only do so much, but then you also have to do your share. And that's so important. I think a lot of people don't recognize that. So, okay, let's see. You state that the various 12-step programs all have something in them that works. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I want you to know I have never been through a 12-step program, so I am just going by what I have read that is part of their programs. And I think the most important thing that I have found that they have in common is really just one thing, and it is something that I have really practiced my entire business life, and that is accountability. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of our young people today. And I think in just generally speaking, we even see it in politics all the time. Mm-hmm. Accountability, taking responsibility for what is your charge, whatever that may be, whether it's raising a family, whether it's taking care of grandchildren, whether it's having a responsibility in business or whatever it is, it's accountability. If you promise to do something, you do it. If you made a mistake, admit it. If it's just like you cannot supposedly, at least I've been watching a lot of television shows, and this is what they say, for example, in AA, if you don't apologize to people you have hurt or go to them and say, this is what I did and I need you to know that I did this, then you cannot really be healed. Well, that's basically it in a nutshell for yourself. If you make a mistake, you need to retake responsibility. And if you tell someone you're going to do something for them, then it needs to be done. And to me, hiring an employee or myself as a subcontractor or myself as a business person or myself as a wife or a mother or a friend, my responsibility is accountability. If I say I'm going to do something, I need to do it.
Okay, and then also another thing that I think people need to be reminded of is that life is full of choices. And when you were talking about accountability, it reminded me of this a little bit, and that, you know, we have the choice to make those amends or not. And should we choose not to, then I believe we're choosing to hurt ourselves. But in everything, we have a choice. We can choose to be happy or we can choose to be sad. We can choose to take the time to get at the core of who we are and try to figure out, you know, what it is that we might want to do with the rest of our life or do tomorrow. But that's a choice. And a lot of women, I think, at midlife have recognized this and are looking at life and saying, okay, I can live this way or I can live this way. And they're choosing to be more intentional about the way they live.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Dotsie. And I will tell you that I think this is the biggest issue in terms of peer pressure that teens have. Mm-hmm. And that is making the choice of friends. And again, when I talk to my son, and remember my son now is 42 years old, my youngest one, and I said to him, you know, there's so much peer pressure. He said, Mom, there was peer pressure when I went to school too, but you chose which kids you wanted to pal around with. You either went one direction or you walked the other way. And if you walked in one direction, you didn't get into trouble and you had the best of everything at the school. And if you chose the other direction, you were always in trouble and you were always part of something that you didn't want to anyone else to know about. And I think that's true in anything. It's you are absolutely right. I do believe there are choices to be made every single day. And again, you know, this is an important thing, I think, when you're talking about midlife or mid-career, and that is relationships that women have as well. Very often, if they've had a bad marriage or they've been in a relationship that has not treated them well, they'll very often choose someone just like that again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that they don't have, they just haven't learned from. And again, it's a poor choice. So whatever it is, whether it's relationships or whether it's business or whether it's friends or whoever it is, there are choices to be made. Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and I also remember you saying about looking at some of your friends and making a choice between the ones who are negative and the ones who are positive, because negative people can really pull you down. And we have the choice, you know.
They can.
Right.
You're so, you know, I just think, remember what I said about 5 minutes of negative thinking takes the body 24 hours to recover from.
Mm.
Just think about when you have been around somebody who's negative, how exhausted you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true. And I think as we're busy, you know, in our lives raising kids and working and taking care of a household, we don't have time to think about the negative people because we're so busy, we don't have time to think. But at this point in our lives, when we assess what's going on around us, this is when we realize there's a lot of people in our life who shouldn't be there.
Right. That's so true. And I think that until this point, we thought that we didn't have a choice as to whether or not we should include them or could have them in our lives. And I think at this stage of the game, we're recognizing the fact that we don't have to hang on to every person.
That's so true. Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. Well, after reading your little introduction there, I just think that you must be an incredibly busy woman, and I can see how the accountability piece has really played into what you're doing, because you must be very accountable and very busy. Now, is your work fun?
My work is absolutely fun, Dotsie. That is the one thing I never compromised on.
Okay.
If I did not enjoy what I was doing, I changed it. Now, I had that luxury because I've always worked for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never ever received a paycheck from anybody in my entire life. Even as a kid, my first job was, well, actually, I had broken 22 pair of glasses, and my father said to me, young lady, if you break another pair, you're going to buy them. Do you understand? And I went up to the optometrist's office, and I picked up my 23rd pair and walked down the steps, and my father was waiting by the curb, and I got into his car, and I sat on the glasses, and we hadn't even pulled away from the curb yet, so I had to go back upstairs and order another pair of glasses, which I was going to have to pay for. So the only thing available was babysitting at the age of 13, and I just didn't want to do that. So I said to my father, can I go out and get a job? And he said, well, if anybody will hire you. And of course, it was the 50s. And so I went through the newspaper and decided I would make a perfect Avon lady. So I started selling Avon cosmetics door to door at 13. I was
oh
very
my
tiny.
Gracious.
Yeah, but I loved it because, see, I knocked on doors, and I love meeting people. I love people. So this was right up my alley. People were home because it was the 50s.
Right.
They let me in, and I would sit down on their couch, and I would not get up until they bought. And they could not get rid of me until they bought something. So that's what I did. And I always created my jobs like I worked in a radio station, and I was there every day for 2 weeks, and had to take two buses to get home. And the general manager came out and said, who are you? And I told him I wanted a job. And he said, well, we don't have a job for you. And I said, I know you don't, but I'll be here every day till you find one. And he did.
Oh, my God.
I would get all my little jobs like that. I was director of choreography and dance and drama at a camp. And they said, we don't have anybody like that. I said, I know. That's why it's lopsided. I said, and I gave him all my reasons why he needed to have this, because he had the swimming and the sports and the this and the that. And he hired somebody for 20 years after that, until he sold the camp, to do what I did. But I only did it once because I wanted the experience and so forth. And that's kind of how I created everything. So everything I've ever wanted to do, I created. And if I didn't like it, then I created something else. And officially, I've been in business for 47 years. And now, of course, I've got the spunky old broad thing going.
Right.
And, I mean, I love it. And the interesting thing is women have taken offense to the word old.
Oh, yes.
Some people take offense to being called broads. And I said, then you're not my market. I want someone who wants to be a spunky old broad. And you would be amazed what you can get away with when you're a spunky old broad. You know, people say to me, well, you can do that because you're a spunky old broad, you know. And it's really interesting. So, yes, my work has always been fun for me.
Well, what do you recommend for women who are feeling like their work isn't so fun or life isn't so fun? What do you recommend for them?
Well, you know, I think everybody has to find their own fun, but mm-hmm. I think it depends on, you know, if you have to work at a specific job, you don't have a choice for whatever reason, whether it's you're the sole support of your family, whether it's a financial thing for yourself, whether you're 3 years away from retirement, you don't want to give that part up, whatever it happens to be, then you need to go back to that, you know, if I won the lottery question, and what is it that you would do if you had the choice to do it, and then do it in your spare time. For example, one of my fun things is exercise. I get a kick out of it. I really work hard at it, but I enjoy it. And that, of course, gives me more energy to do everything else. The other thing I really enjoy is I'm an animal fanatic. I support the Humane Society, and, you know, I just love animals. And so when I'm with my animals, I talk to them, and I just have the best time. So whatever it is, and also, this is going to sound very shallow, I don't go to movies that have a message. I go to movies that are entertaining.
Right,
because I
laugh.
Like to laugh.
Sure.
You know, so that's what I like to do. So those are the things that I do. I much prefer going to a musical on stage than a heavy drama on stage. So those are the things I do for fun. So whatever anybody else likes as a hobby or as an interest or whatever it happens to be, that should be their fun.
Okay, good idea. All right. Now, how does balance have anything to do with energizing your life?
Well, if someone is out of balance, I mean, if you can visualize the scale, even the Lady of Justice, if something is out of balance, you are not going to have energy because you are going to be drained, because you're going to be really upset about what you're doing, you're going to be stressed about what you're doing, and you're going to have that negativity, which is going to take the energy out of you. But what I need everyone to understand is what's balanced for one person is not balanced for another. And what was a balance for you at 20 is different than what is a balance at 50. And what's balanced at 50 is different than a balance at 70. So it depends on what it balances for you. My work was always number one in my life. And luckily I'm married to a guy who likes that. I mean, he's fine with it. So there's no problem. He was always the one that was in the home. I mean, he worked, but he was the primary caregiver as far as the kids were concerned, because he really liked that. So it just depends on your own particular situation. And that is that, you, for instance, one of the things now, he's not well at all. And so I am his caregiver. And when I go out of town, like I'm going out again in 2 days, and I'm arranging all his medications so that he gets them when he's supposed to get them. I have someone come in who makes sure he's taken care of and so forth. And that's have not wanted to accept in my life, but it is one thing that has happened, and so I need to take care of that. And what's very important to me is that I work out 2 hours every day to give me the energy to do that. Then I also am a bi-coastal person. So I have a place in California, in San Diego, and, of course, in Miami Beach. And so I go 1 week a month to my place in San Diego. Now, he originally was supposed to go with me, but now he doesn't like to travel. He doesn't like all the hassle and all the things that I go through to get from one place to the other. And so he stays home. But I still go, and occasionally he'll say something to me, and I say, well, you know, this was for us. You don't want to go now, but I'm still going to go. And I go, and I have a lot of activities out there, and I know a lot of people out there, and I'm very involved out there. But the thing is that's my balance, and you need to be able, and I never would have done that before, gone 1 week a month to another location. But at this point in my life, that's balance for me, because my two favorite places in the world are Miami Beach and San Diego. So if I never went anywhere else, I'd be perfectly happy. So again, I think everybody has to look and say, how do I want to live my life? Some people want to be totally involved with their grandchildren. Some people want to be totally involved with a charity. Some people want to be totally involved with their home and gardening and flowers and cooking and devising wonderful recipes. I've never even used my stove in San Diego because I don't cook. So I think balance is different for everybody, and that's why I can never tell anybody else what to do. I can only advise them or mentor them if that's what they want, but everybody has to seek their own balance. So I think that when you are balanced, when you are in balance, whatever that means to you, then you feel good about yourself and you have energy. But when it is out of sync, when you have things that are not, you don't, you know what the most important thing is, Dottie, and I think this is the thing that, your listeners really need to be aware of. We cannot control everything. And stress does not come from too much work or too much responsibility or, taking care of or being a part of the sandwich generation, taking care of parents as well as grandchildren. It comes from high demand and low control. And when you are asked to do things that are really, really difficult and you have no control over how they are done or how they happen, that's when your life comes out of balance.
And has that, I mean, I've got to think that that has happened to you at some point in time.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. There are, I'll give you three or four examples. Number one, when I was doing a lot of traveling, when I was on the road 50 weeks a year, I found that I could not control the airline schedule. And this is before 9/11. I could not control the airline schedule. I could not control weather. I could not control, I mean, they were not going to change things just for me. That's when I did my writing. That's when I did my reading in the airports, in lounges, in the airport lounges, whenever, because there was nothing I could do about it. And so that was how I solved that. When I had Cassie and my granddaughter, there were lots of issues there and lots of court demands. I had no control over that. That was the legal system.
Mm-hmm.
It was very stressful. Even, you know, some other things, for example, that even my husband's health. I mean, he causes a lot of his circumstances, and I try to do the best job for him. I mean, in terms of watching what he eats and making sure he takes his medication on time, but then he goes off and does something on his own that is totally bizarre that ruins all of that. I don't have control over that. I have learned to say, I am happy married to you for 44 years, long time,
mm-hmm.
and I want to have another 44 years, but I can't live your life for you. And that's where I think a lot of women get in trouble. They think they can live everybody's life for them, and you can't.
Right, right. Well, during these times when you feel overwhelmed, or any of the women listening were to feel overwhelmed, how do you stop those feelings? I mean, we've talked about balance, and we've talked about how to remain energetic and looking at things that have like a high demand and you have low control. But we also know that there are definitely times when we feel overwhelmed. And so how do you stop those feelings of being overwhelmed?
Well, I think that you have to find out what are your stress reducers. Now, I've mentioned two of mine. Number one was the animals. I mean, I really talk to my animals, and they make me really feel calm. I also, the exercise, that's another way to work
mm-hmm.
out my frustrations. I think everybody has to find their mecca, whatever it is, as long as it's not alcohol, as long as it's not drugs.
Right, as long as it's healthy.
Right, legal and healthy. Whatever that is, it might be painting. For some people, it might be, again, working in the garden or planting something or designing something. It could be, it could be anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, people have to find the things that they feel good about. And it could be any number of things. It could be, you know, again, volunteering. It's an interesting thing. And you see people who are not as well off as you are, for example, in hospitals or kids' wards or things like that. It makes you forget your own troubles, you know. So whatever it is that's a stress reducer for the individual is important. Now, it's been different things for me at different points in my life. The animals have always been a constant, and exercise in one form or another. I'm a very big swimmer and water skier and person like that. But, you know, whatever that is, I think someone has to be able to go to that zone. Now, I don't do this well, but I know there are people who meditate, and it totally reverses all the stress that they have and the overwhelming feelings. I have not been able to conquer meditation because I'm too hyper, but I know that it works because it has worked for several people who I know very well. So it could be meditation. There's just a whole bunch of different things that people can try, and I think the important thing is to admit you're overwhelmed. You know, a lot of us don't want to admit that, oh, we can't do it all. But, you know, as I get older, I really do say, you know, I can't do it anymore. I used to work 12 hours a day. Now, I still work 12 hours a day, but I'm not working. I was focused on my business. Now I only have 4 hours, maybe five max, out of the 12 where I can focus on just my business because I run our real estate now because my husband can't do it anymore. I have to manage his health care. I'm managing 4 homes that we have. I mean, I have property managers in some of them. But the whole point is I can't devote myself to my single entity business anymore. It's impossible. So that's what I'm saying. I have admitted, even though I keep saying it's not true, that I cannot do it all anymore because he was a big part of my ability to focus 12 hours a day on my business.
Right.
And now he can't be.
Right. And I think something that's important that you've mentioned, too, is the shifting. You know, and I think it's important that we always evaluate and reevaluate and then shift and make different and you know, make the necessary changes so that we don't feel overwhelmed at a certain point in our life or, you know, so that we can still feel like we have energy and, you know, are able to do what needs to be done. But sometimes what needs to be done changes.
Oh, you know, I gotta tell you a cute story, Duffy. My husband this weekend, I was gone this weekend speaking, and and he evidently found a box of old pictures, and he last night he said, "Honey, you gotta come in and see these." So I saw them, and oh, Duffy, it was when I was at my most beautiful, and it was when I was in the modeling business, and I mean, I was just really a golden girl and really slim and tiny. I'm not heavy now, but I mean, I was slim and tiny. So I brought it to the gym this morning, and I said, "I want you all to see how I was beautiful at one point in my life." And they were laughing, and they said, "You look gorgeous, but you look gorgeous now." And I said, "Yeah, but I don't look like that." And they said, "Yes, but you have a different kind of beauty now, and it's wonderful." And I thought, you know, isn't that interesting? Because, yes, I mean, I know I look pretty good for my age, but still, I mean, you know, when you go back to those old photos and you see what you really look like in your prime, I had to say, wow, you know, we do shift. The problem is a lot of us don't want to accept the shifts that we have to make. For example, I cannot wear high heels anymore. I can't wear any kind of heels because my feet are so bad. So, for example, when I do aerobics, I have to do very flat-footed aerobics. I can't go hopping all over the floor, you know, and I have limited ability in certain portions of my body because of all the surgeries that I've had. But, you know, I'm still moving around, and that's what counts.
Good. Okay. That's interesting because I think that, you know, the more we mature, the more we have to realize that, you know, yeah, we can continue to do many things, but sometimes we have to shift the way we do them. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know that saying, shift happens, right?
Right, right. All right. Let's see. We've talked about energizing the life and using our uniqueness as a road to success, but you also mentioned using power relationships. Can you tell me what you mean by that, using the power relationships and your uniqueness as a road to success?
Absolutely. I think there's a couple things. First of all, I think you need to challenge yourself with the people that you meet. And I think you need to ask yourself, who would I really like to have in my life that will bring me up to the next level. Now, at this workshop I was at this weekend where I spoke, guess who was one of the speakers there? And I got to meet her and talk with her, and it was really quite interesting, and that was Teresa Hines Carey. And, you know, Teresa, now there's a great example. Teresa Hines is a brilliant woman, but she wasn't called to the plate until her first husband died in a plane crash, I think. And so she had to take over. She was left all the Hines money, and she had to decide what to do with it. And she's the one that created the foundations. She has taken an active role in the environment. She has had a big part in cleaning up the city of Pittsburgh. She's done a lot of things that people don't even know about, and she's very quiet about them. But she had to learn how to do that. I'm going to use somebody else, too, and that's my mom. My mom just celebrated her 97th birthday. And she had never written a check, had never driven a car until my father died. And she's been a widow for over 35 years. And that's 35 years ago is when, in fact, I think it's even longer than that, she learned to drive a car. She learned to write a check. She can balance the checkbook with the best banks in town. And that's the kind of woman she is, even though she never graduated high school, because in those days you didn't do that. The brother did that. And so, and she's the one who has made me who I am, because she made me face everything. I remember, for example, in college when I tried out for a musical, and they wanted my partner and I to split up, and they asked us if we would. And she said, and I said, he said no, because he thought, you know, oh, no, we won't. And I said yes, because I thought they wanted me. But they didn't want me. They wanted him, because there were no male dancers in the 50s. So I was just devastated. And I called my mother up. I was bawling my eyes out. And she said to me, get over it. She said, this is not the big time. This is college. If you can't make it in college, you're not going to make it anywhere. So that's how I was brought up. And I think you need to challenge yourself by the people who you choose to want to be around. I think you should aim for one level up from where you are, or two or three levels up from where you are. And if you keep aiming for that, you're eventually going to get there. The other thing is that when people oppose you or tell you that you're wrong, or question your thought processes or your research or whatever, you need to stand up for yourself, and you need to be able to stand up for yourself in an assertive way and not in an aggressive way. Aggressive is when you shout and you yell and you carry on, and passive is when you sound like a meek little nothing, and assertiveness is when you say, I believe this is so, and these are the reasons why. I don't deserve to be talked to like that, and I will not accept it. And those are the ways that you create these power relationships. It's by standing up for yourself and stating your case in an authoritative manner. And if you can't do that, or you don't know how to do that, I really suggest people getting themselves a little old tape recorder and listening and practicing statements. Have people ask you things to antagonize you and answer back, and listen to how you sound. Because, and of course, anyone who has ever heard this has themselves on tape, no, they say, well, that's not me, but it is you. That's exactly what you sound like. And you learn about your own voice. And I was very lucky, because being trained in speech and theater and all of that, I had to give in college about 17 public appearances a week. And I had all D's when I started out, and I asked my grandmother, would she buy me a tape recorder? And those in the days of the reel-to-reel, not the little ones you've got now. And I practiced 3 hours a night for 3 years to be able to speak authoritatively and well. And it is in your verbal and your nonverbal communication that people communicate their power.
Right. And, you know, one thing I think is that some women think that because they don't know someone to help them, that they don't already know that person, it means that that's the end. And I don't agree with that. I agree that, you know, you can go online and research what you need, and then you just email the person, call the person, contact the person. to help take you to the next step. And I just like to encourage women to really just put themselves out there and not feel like there are any boundaries, because there are some people who feel like, I can't take this next step because I really don't know anybody who can help me.
Well, and that that's true, and you are absolutely right that the internet today is opens the whole world to you, and not only that, but it also gives you the ability to see what else is out there and who is doing what. But if you put the word out there, whether it's to people you know or going to a meeting first time or whatever it is, if you put the word out there, someone will get back to you with the right contact. It's amazing how that happens. And I think today there are more and more women who are finally helping other women.
Oh, my gosh, you're not kidding. I mean, everything that I've done online, I just started by reaching out to other women online, and other women do the same to me, and it's just like, I just think it's been an incredible networking situation, because women, I really believe, are willing to help other women.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it seems to me that most of your businesses are not your traditional business. So, you know, how do you continue to think outside of the box, and how do you encourage women to do the same?
Well, in terms of thinking outside the box, I think that that's where a lot of reading comes in and a lot of associating with people unlike yourself, because if you may not like them, but you don't have to like them to appreciate their knowledge, and as long as you respect what they do and how they do it, you know, it may not be your interest, but it gets you to think a different way. And so I think if you associate with people who do not do things exactly the way you do them, that's the best way to have that happen. I happen to be friends with and study with a lot of people who say, you know, if everybody's doing it this way, then you go the other way. And I don't want people to be reckless about that, but it's just looking at something in an entirely different manner than anyone ever thought of before. But you can't do it by associating with the same people who are like you, because then you think you're yes people then. You have to have people who can challenge you and who can say, have you ever thought about doing it this way? And that's one of the values of coaches or mentors or organizations for that matter, because they show you different ways of doing things. For example, you mentioned that I was president of an Internet Information Marketing Association. And understand, I never got on a computer till I was 60. So this was not something that I loved. And my partner said to me, Gail, you don't know anything. And I said, you're right, I don't. What do I do? And he said, go to a high school and get yourself a kid. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, go to your local high school and get a kid who is web savvy. So I said goodbye. I literally said goodbye. I closed my office, got in my car, went to the local high school, got past the security guards, went into the business classroom. The teacher asked me, who are you? And I said, well, I'm here to get a kid. And she said, what are you talking about? And I told her that I needed somebody who was web savvy, and I wasn't going to leave without one. And I did. I actually walked out with a kid. And then he got me another kid who is still with me. But the point is that this kid, who is just now 18, he started with me when he was 16, he challenges me every time he comes in, because it takes him exactly 2 seconds what it takes me 2 hours to do. And I watch him, and I see how he thinks, and it gives me a whole different perspective. He does not read a newspaper. He does not watch television. He does not, I mean, and he's an advanced placement kid who's going on to college this year. But he gets all his information online.
Right. Oh, and boy, that's very typical of the younger generation.
Yes.
But
yes.
One of the things that I think is so important from listening to that story is that you don't have any boundaries. And that's really important. Now, some people might, someone else may have gotten that same advice and they would have said, oh, I can't do that. I can't go to a school and just get a kid. But it's you have done all of this because you are willing to think outside the box and take chances and take risks and just do it without thinking, I can't do it.
Well, you know, the thing, though, Dossie, is that I don't think of it as a risk.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
It's just what you have to do to be successful.
Right. That's a great point. But I just think that a lot of times we get to a certain point and we don't go any farther because we are afraid that we can't take that next step, or we don't know enough to do the next. And I think that's why a lot of women, you know, can get sidetracked with this whole reinventing themselves at midlife. You know, you have to just be willing to listen to people who think differently than you do and take their advice.
But, you know, there's another part of that, too, and that is I don't think that they have the passion for what it is they say they want. They say it because it's convenient to say it, or they've been told to say it, or enough other people have said it to them that they think they should say it, but it's not something that they are passionate about for themselves.
Good point, because when you are passionate, you don't even think about the next step. You just start doing it, you know. Okay, now what do I do? Now what do I do? Now what do I do? And there's just this momentum and the desire to just keep doing. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Well, that's one of the things, like, when I talk about in my SOB, The Spunky Old Broad, I talk about the fact that I teach women the 9 secrets of living a regret-free life. And the whole point of it is whatever that means to them and how they do it is up to them. But why should anyone get to a point in their later years and say, I wish I had? There is absolutely no reason for them to do that.
Right. That's a good point. Well, we are really coming close to the hour here. So one other thing that maybe we should throw in at the end is, how do you set limits for yourself with others and that others will respect?
Well, you have to walk your talk. In other words, if you say no, it's no. It's, for example, if someone says, if you say, you know, I really, let's say that you've been asked to babysit your grandchildren, and, you know, you love your grandchildren, you want to be with them, but you don't want to be all the time the person that they rely on to sit for the kids. You need to say, you know, I'd love to do it, and I'm available, you know, as often as I can be, but there are times when I really have things that I want to do, or places I want to go, or tickets that I want to take advantage of, or reservations that I have, and I really don't really want to do it more than 3 or 4 times a month. Then you need to stick to it. And if you say, I really don't enjoy doing this activity or being a part of this, then don't say yes out of being out of obligation. And I will give you a really personal example. When my granddaughter came to live with us, I had certain rules. They were not difficult. It was the phone for 5 minutes, that's it. Keep your room clean, that's it. And, basically keep everything straight. I mean, it wasn't difficult rules, and she found them very difficult to stick to. And when she went back to live at home, then she called me up about 6 months later and wanted to come back, and I said no. And she said, why not? I said, well, your grandfather's had open-heart surgery. Your great-grandmother is coming down, and you have to share a bathroom with her, and you don't know how to keep a bathroom clean. And third, my rules haven't changed. They are the same, and you don't like them, and they're not going to change. So you have to be able to.
Wow, good for you.
But it was not easy, but
right.
I had to do it. Mm-hmm. So I said, one of the things you're going to learn in life, it isn't fair, and you might as well start learning it now because it's going to be that way the rest of your life. And you choose, and you talked about choices before, Dossie,
mm-hmm.
You choose how you're going to lead your life, and you choose what it is you do. So you need to start learning that now.
Wow, that's a perfect example. And it's interesting because some of the things that we've talked about on this call today are topics that women are always talking about in the BoomerWomenSpeak.com forums. In fact, one of the most recent posts from just last week was about a woman who really didn't want to live in the same town with her family. And while lots of boomers are moving to live in the same town, she's thinking, oh my gosh, what if they move to my town, move back to my town? And it's just been an interesting post because she knows the boundaries that she has set. And she's fretting because, you know, she's afraid that she may be asked to kind of step up to the plate and you know, be more available to grandchildren and that type of thing. So it's interesting to hear you say that because it is. It's just so true that a lot of times we end up saying yes when we mean no, and we really need to make our no's mean no and set those limits that other people will respect. So I appreciate that comment. Gail, there really isn't much else other than I wanted to know if you have any books or resources, you know, your website, anything that you want to offer the women on the call today.
Well, actually, there are two or three things. Number one is, yes, I have a lot of resources available. So there's two different websites they can go to. One is my business website, which is GailCarson.com, and that's G-A-Y-L-E, Carson.com. And then there's the one for women over 50, and that's SpunkyOldBroad.com. And if they go to that website, they can see my book, they can sign up for my newsletter, they can do whatever they'd like there. We have SOB clubs forming and things like that. So certainly they can do that. And another website I think they should be aware of is AARP has started a foundation for women, and that website is aarp.org/foundation/WLC, and then they would have to click on Get Involved. But I would also like to offer, since I do mentor women over 50, I would say if anybody contacts me at Gayle, at SpunkyOldBroad.com and mentions UDOTSI or the organization, I will give them 50%, one half, of my regular mentoring coaching fee for 90 days. In other words, they will have 3 months of me at half price.
Wow, that's quite an offer. Thank you so much. And this is a timeless offer because this is something that people can listen to in a few months. So,
absolutely.
And you're aware of that. Okay. And I would also just like to mention the association again, which is the National Association of Baby Boomer Women. And if anyone that's listening is not a member of the association and would like to join, you can contact me at DOTS, and that's D-O-T-S, at NABBW.com. The membership fee to join is $75, and I'll be happy to send you a link to join for $60, but you have to send me an email in order to get that link. So anyway, I just want to thank you, Gail, for being on the call, and I'll look forward to maybe doing another one with you in the future, and I hope some people will take advantage of your offer, and I just wish you all the best.
Well, thank you so much, Jossie, and the same to you, because you are really providing a wonderful forum for women all worldwide, really, and I think it's really important for women to take advantage of the things that you offer, the resources that you offer, and also the contacts that the association has, so I want to applaud you as well.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's fun. I'm living my passion.
That's right. There you go.
Yeah. All right, Gail. Well, thanks again for being on the call, and I'll be in touch shortly.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.